Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome back to the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. At the same time, we tell you about important things that are happening all around us. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington, and this is my first chance in a while to wish you a Happy New Year. Today, we have an interesting story for you. It comes from a rather unusual place, behind bars. The United States has the largest prison population in the world. More than 2 million people are jailed. China is second with about 1.7 million. In some U.S. prisons, inmates are not just doing time, as they often describe their prison sentences. Some prisoners are working to protect the environment. Near Olympia, Washington, in the western part of the United States, inmates are raising rare and endangered plants, animals, and insects for release in the wild. The project began 10 years ago when a state university teamed up with the prison. Anna Mateo tells us more.
Stafford Creek Prison is in the northwestern U.S. state of Washington. To enter the prison's garden area, you must go through 2 metal detectors. Then, you have to pass through double gates, topped with sharp wire, and guarded by several armed prison police. In the garden, a small crew of inmates is planting flowers. The flowers will be moved after several months to wild areas around Washington's coastline. The plants will provide food for endangered butterflies.
These plants are so fickle.
Toby Earhart is an inmate with plenty of time to experiment with growing seedlings. The inmates are paid very little for their work. Mr. Earhart says he believes prisoners and the business of growing rare plants go together well.
You cannot have a nursery that produces these for money because they would go broke or the cost would be so high that nobody could ever restore anything with them. So that's why this is such a good fit to have prisoners doing this because, well, I mean, they don't have to pay as much. So.
Mr. Earhart is serving time for child rape. He says his work growing plants in prison has changed him. He says he is more conscientious or thoughtful about doing what is right. Prison supervisor Pat Gleeby likes to see such change in inmates. He says the prison garden work reduces violence in the prison.
It helps with the level of violence in the prison because these inmates all of a sudden they have something else to do and they see the value in it and they see the value of giving back.
Mr. Gleeby says many people think they know what the inside of a prison is like. But often, they are wrong. Their preconceived notion, he says, is challenged when they visit Stafford Creek Prison. Stafford Creek Prison's conservation nursery opened 5 years ago. Since then, the nursery has produced more than 1 million rare and endangered grassland plants. Inmates in other U.S. prisons are also using conservation projects to turn over new leaves or begin life with a fresh new outlook. At a state prison in Ohio, inmates are raising endangered small amphibians called Eastern Hellbender Salamanders. They will release the animals into the wild. In Maryland, inmates prepare bags of oyster shells that will be used to repair the nearby Chesapeake Bay. In Oregon, the law requires that all prisoners work full-time or attend classes. Prison managers must find meaningful labor for everyone. This may explain why Oregon's prison system was fertile ground to begin a project such as a conservation nursery. A combination of federal, state, and private money covers most program costs. Tom Kay directs the Institute for Applied Ecology, one of the partners in the Oregon Sustainability in Prisons project. He says, as you might expect, working in a prison can be difficult.
Just going to visit and volunteer at a prison is no simple task. You have to watch your dress code. You have to watch how you behave in prisons.
But Mr. Kay says it is a worthy effort. He says the project is the cause of more good than trouble.
Oh, the advantages far outweigh any of these disadvantages. Because we're able to get so much more done for ourselves in the mission that we are trying to accomplish.
Inmates who are part of the program make very little money for their work. The pay in the Washington State area is less than a dollar an hour, and the gardening work can sometimes be boring and repetitive. But these difficulties do not seem to trouble inmate Joseph Junge. He says he requested a move to Stafford Creek Prison because he hoped to work in the conservation nursery. Many inmates seek the nursery jobs.
It's hard to get into the program, but when you get into the program, what they teach you is something that you probably won't get somewhere else, you know, because most of the seeds they're having us grow are indigenous plants that you won't find anywhere else in the U.S. except here.
Mr. Junge is a Kenyan native. He is serving 16 years in prison for murder. The U.S. could return him to Kenya once he is freed. Mr. Junge hopes his new skills will help him get a job instead. He would like to continue working to protect the environment after his release, wherever he goes. The Washington State Prison Environmental Science Program has expanded in many directions. At this prison, inmates also train ownerless dogs to make them more appealing for adoption. Other prisoners are fish farming. They grow a warm water fish called tilapia in solar-heated tanks. Still more inmates fix bicycles and wheelchairs for the needy. I'm Ana Mateo.
You are listening to the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. So it's the start of a new year. It is a time when people often make promises as they hope to improve their health and feel better in 2015. Swedish scientists say they have proven that physical exercise changes not only our health, but also our genetic material. Scientists have long known that some diets or exposure to chemicals can change the way genes send and receive chemical signals in the body. But nothing was known about the influence of physical exercise. Christopher Cruz reports.
The Swedish study shows that exercise can have an effect on our deoxyribonucleic acid, or DNA. DNA is often called the building blocks of life. DNA is the material that carries genetic information in cells. The study was a project of scientists at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm. They asked 23 young, healthy women and men to exercise on stationary bicycles with only one leg several times a week for 3 months. The scientists then compared DNA taken from muscle cells in both legs. They found DNA had changed greatly in the leg that got more exercise. Many of the genes that changed were linked to energy, insulin, and muscle inflammation or pain. Scientists say this shows that regular exercise affects our genes and can lead to better health. They say future studies would examine how long the changes last if someone stops exercising. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Thank you for being with us. Let's do it again tomorrow.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
If asked, what was the most important health story of 2014, there would be little debate. As of January 3, 2015, Ebola has killed more than 8,000 people and infected more than 20,000. These numbers come from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in the U.S. and the World Health Organization. But this is not the first time the world has heard of Ebola. The virus spent many years in African forests, far from human populations. Every 10 years or so, it would appear in small villages and kill a few hundred people. But the Ebola outbreak that began in 2014 is very different than all that came before. This time, Ebola is sickening thousands of people in West Africa. It crossed into cities and over national borders. The world reacted with shock and fear, and Ebola continues to kill. The Ebola outbreak began in rural Guinea a year ago. Months passed before health officials identified the virus. The disease spread to the capital and crossed into Sierra Leone and Liberia. By June, cases began to rise quickly in those two countries. Misunderstanding, miscommunication, and fear also grew. Governments answered the panic with lockdowns and quarantines. They put infected people in restricted communities. But governments also increased education efforts. Today, health workers continue to go door to door looking for possible cases. To stop Ebola, doctors must separate infected people from non-infected people. Ebola has shown the weaknesses in healthcare systems in the most affected countries. By September, hospitals had closed in Monrovia. There were not enough beds or workers at Ebola treatment centers. People with other sicknesses who look for treatment are often exposed to Ebola patients. VOA Learning English spoke to a doctor who got Ebola while working with HIV/AIDS patients in Liberia. Dr. Rick Sakra says a broken healthcare system is the biggest issue in Ebola-affected areas.
So we have a terrible situation right now in both Liberia and Sierra Leone, where like pregnant women who can't deliver and need a C-section, many of them have nowhere to go because the health facilities around them are closed.
French researchers are developing an Ebola test to provide results in 15 minutes. The current Ebola test takes 24 hours. Japan and the United States are also working on developing faster tests. Lausanne's University Hospital in Switzerland began testing a possible Ebola vaccine in November in healthy volunteers. If the vaccine proves effective, researchers will organize tests with larger groups. And that's the Health Report. I'm Ana Mateo. Thank you.
I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Shirley Griffith with Explorations in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about one of the greatest thinkers in the world, Leonardo da Vinci. He began his career as an artist, but his interest in the world around him drove him to study music, math, science, engineering, and building design. Many of his ideas and inventions were centuries ahead of his time.
We start with one of Leonardo da Vinci's most famous drawings, called Vitruvian Man. This work is a good example of his ever-questioning mind and his effort to bring together art, math, and science. Vitruvian Man is a detailed sketch of a man's body, which is drawn at the center of a square and circle. The man's stretched arms and legs are in two positions, showing the range of his motion. His arms and legs touch the edges of the square and circle.
With this drawing, Leonardo was considering the size of the human body and its relationship to geometry and the writings of the ancient Roman building designer Vitruvius. Leonardo wrote this about how to develop a complete mind. Study the science of art. Study the art of science. Develop your senses, especially learn how to see. Realize that everything connects to everything else.
Leonardo da Vinci spent his life studying and observing in order to develop a scientific understanding of the world. He wrote down his thoughts and project ideas in a series of small notebooks. He made drawings and explained them with detailed notes. In these notebooks, he would write the words backwards. Some experts say he wrote this way because he wished to be secretive about his findings. But others say he wrote this way because he was left-handed, and writing backwards was easier and helped keep the ink from smearing.
The notebooks show many very modern ideas. Leonardo designed weapons, machines, engines, robots, and many other kinds of engineering devices. When disease spread in Milan, Leonardo designed a city that would help resist the spread of infection. He designed devices to help people climb walls and devices to help people fly. He designed early versions of modern machines, such as the tank and helicopter. Few of these designs were built during his lifetime, but they show his extraordinarily forward-thinking mind. The notebooks also contain details about his daily life. These have helped historians learn more about the personal side of this great thinker.
Very little is known about Leonardo's early life. He was born in 1452 in the town of Vinci. His father, Ser Piero da Vinci, was a legal expert. Experts do not know for sure about his mother, Caterina, but they do know that Leonardo's parents were never married to each other. As a boy, Leonardo showed a great interest in drawing, sculpting, and observing nature. However, because Leonardo was born to parents who were not married to each other, he was barred from some studies and professions. He trained as an artist after moving to Florence with his father,
in the 1460s.
It was an exciting time to be in Florence, one of the cultural capitals of Europe. Leonardo trained with one of the city's very successful artists, Andrea del Verrocchio. He was a painter, sculptor, and gold worker. Verrocchio told his students that they needed to understand the body's bones and muscles when drawing people. Leonardo took his teacher's advice very seriously. He spent several periods of his life studying the human body by taking apart and examining dead bodies. Experts say his later drawings of the organs and systems of the human body are still unequaled to this day.
While training as an artist, Leonardo also learned about and improved on relatively new painting methods at the time. One was the use of perspective to show depth. A method called sfumato helped to create a cloudy effect to suggest distance. Chiaroscuro is a method using light and shade as a painterly effect. The artist also used oil paints instead of the traditional tempera paints used in Italy during this period.
Leonardo's first known portrait now hangs in the National Gallery in Washington, D.C. He made this painting of a young woman named Ginevra da Benci around 1474. The woman has a pale face with dark hair. In the distance, Leonardo painted the Italian countryside. He soon received attention for his extraordinary artistic skills. Around 1475, he was asked to draw an angel in Verrocchio's painting, Baptism of Christ. One story says that when Verrocchio saw Leonardo's addition to the painting, he was so amazed by his student's skill that he said he would never paint again.
Leonardo once said the following about actively using one's mental abilities. Iron rusts from disuse. Stagnant water loses its purity and in cold weather becomes frozen. Even so does inaction sap the vigor of the mind. His mind was so active that he did not often finish his many projects. One religious painting he never finished was called Adoration of the Magi. He was hired to make the painting for a religious center. The complex drawing he made to prepare for the painting is very special. It shows how carefully he planned his artworks. It shows his deep knowledge of geometry, volume, and depth. He drew the many people in the painting without clothes so that he could make sure that their bodies would be physically correct once covered.
Around 1482, Leonardo moved to Milan. There, he worked for the city's ruler, Ludovico Sforza. This ruler invited Leonardo to Milan not as an artist, but as a musician. Historians say Leonardo was one of the most skillful lyre players in all of Italy. But he also continued his work as a painter. He also designed everything from festivals to weapons and a sculpture for Ludovico Sforza.
One famous work from Leonardo's Milan period is called The Virgin of the Rocks. It shows Jesus as a baby, along with his mother Mary, and John the Baptist, also as a baby. They are sitting outside in an unusual environment. Leonardo used his careful observations of nature to paint many kinds of plants. In the background are a series of severe rock formations. The painting helped Leonardo make it clear to the ruler and people of Milan that he was a very inventive and skillful artist.
Leonardo later made his famous painting, The Last Supper, for the dining room of a religious center in Milan. He combined his studies in light, math, psychology, geometry, and anatomy for this special work. He designed the painting to look like it was part of the room. The painting shows a story from the Bible in which Jesus eats a meal with his followers for the last time. Jesus announces that one of them will betray him. The work received wide praise, and many artists tried to copy its beauty. One modern art expert described Leonardo's Last Supper as the foundation of Western art. Unfortunately, Leonardo experimented with a new painting method for this work. The paint has suffered extreme damage over the centuries.
In addition to the portrait of Ginevra da Benci that we talked about earlier, Leonardo also painted several other non-religious paintings of women. One painting of Cecilia Gallerani has come to be known as Lady with an Ermine because of the small white animal she is holding. This woman was the lover of Milan's ruler, Ludovico Sforza. However, Leonardo's most famous portrait of a woman is called the Mona Lisa. It is now in the collection of the Louvre Museum in Paris. He painted this image of Lisa Gherardini starting around 1503. She was the wife of a wealthy businessman from Florence named Francesco del Giocondo. It is from him that the painting takes its Italian name, La Gioconda.
Lisa Gherardini is sitting down with her hands crossed in her lap. She looks directly at the painter. She seems to be smiling ever so slightly. A great deal of mystery surrounds the painting. Experts are not sure about how or why Leonardo came to paint the work. But they do know that he never gave it to the Giocondo family. He kept the painting with him for the rest of his life, during his travels through France and Italy. Leonardo da Vinci died in France in 1519. A friend who was with him at his death said this of the great man's life: "May God Almighty grant him eternal peace. Everyone laments the loss of a man whose like nature cannot produce a second time."
This program was written and produced by Dana Demange. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Shirley Griffith. You can see some of Leonardo da Vinci's work at our website, voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for Explorations in VOA Special English.